You're listening to the OMFIF podcast, the show that explores the latest insights and discussions on global finance, economics, and policy for people who love staying informed about the rapidly evolving landscape of the financial world. Join us as we break down complex topics, interview key thought leaders, and provide essential insights to keep you informed about the evolving world of finance.
Welcome, everybody. This is David Marsh. And I'm here with Charles Dallara, who is the chairman of the Partners Group. He is a very well-known person who's been involved in international finance now for many decades, bearing in mind that he was working together with Ronald Reagan and also with George Bush Sr. back in the days before 1991, before the breakup of the Soviet Union. He was there for 20 years talking very strongly with international financiers regarding everything going on in world money at the head of the Institute for International Finance in Washington, the premier body bringing together banks, sovereign institutions, governments from all around the world. I'm also here with Burhan Kadbai, who's in charge of our debt capital markets section, looking at what's going on in debt capital markets around the world. And we're going to talk to Charles about his fascinating new book called Euro Shock, which is about what happened with the Greek debt restructuring, the biggest restructuring of sovereign debt in history, which took place in 2010, 2011, when you were at the IIF, at the Institute of International Finance, Charles. So first of all, what made you write this book in the first place?
Well, David, let me first say it's a pleasure to be here with you and Burhan and engage in this podcast with OMFIF. The book really emerged from my experience in what was, for me, the most extraordinary sovereign debt restructuring that I'd ever been involved in. During my years at the Treasury, which coincided with the Latin debt crisis, I was involved with a lot of them, David. And from 1982 to 1989, and even on into 90 and 91, after we launched the Brady Plan, I was involved heavily in sovereign debt crises and restructurings and rescheduling. And then during my years at the IIF, we did, as you know, a fair amount of analysis of risks of investing in emerging markets, but also we engaged in rather low profile, generally, support for countries who had lost market access but were trying to reestablish it. And this could involve anything from Mexico in 1995 to Hungary in 1996 to Turkey toward the end of the 90s, the Czech Republic at one point. But when I was at the helm of the IIF in 2010 and 11, we were pulled into what was an extraordinary situation. And it became, in my view, not just a Greek debt crisis, but a Eurozone crisis broadly defined.
Well, also, it did have the capability of blowing up the world economy, didn't it? I know that President Obama was very vexed about the whole thing. What is the special case about Greece that makes this book not just for people like us who are interested in finance, but people who are interested in economics in general? What makes it so compelling? Is it the fact that this small country was so capable of having such a large effect? Or is it because the whole manner where Greece joined the euro area was itself a bit dubious, and therefore somehow all these problems that came about with manipulating statistics and so on when Greece joined the euro area as the 12th member, they all blew up, didn't they?
Well, I think, David, I think this case is compelling in part because you do have a relatively small economy, less than 10% the size of the Italian economy, less than one-fifth the size of the German economy, which because of its membership in the Eurozone, this centralized new common currency had the potential to blow up the entire Eurozone. It's important to recognize, though, that when I dove into writing this after my experience of leading with Jean Lemierre, the private sector side of these negotiations, that I might not have fully appreciated that as Greece was struggling with its own mighty debt problems, it was swirling in a vortex with Ireland, Italy, Portugal, and Spain as well. This crisis really, if we look back upon it, as you will recall, because you've spent so much of your time writing and recording really the history of the Eurozone, really was a Eurozone crisis, and it threatened to rip it apart, partly because there was growing discussion during these negotiations coming from senior authorities, particularly in countries such as Germany, the Netherlands, and Finland, forcing Greece out of the Eurozone. I always believed that would have been a disaster for the Eurozone because I think that it wouldn't have stopped there. I believe that if Greece had been forced out of the Eurozone, Italy would have been next to follow, and then the Eurozone would have been in tatters. I also think that there's a lot of lessons to be learned here by the Greeks, by the Europeans, and by the IMF about how to manage crises in the Eurozone, which have some special characteristics.
Well, there may well be crises in the future, and we'll go into this a little bit in the course of this podcast. Just one more question before I hand over to Burhan on the actual deal itself and what happened. The bankers are often not very well liked during debt restructurings, but you seem to have become quite a favourite of the Greeks. And on the other hand, President Sarkozy did not like you at all, the banks, particularly the French bank. Could you just explain why that juxtaposition took place?
Well, it's hard for me to fully explain why we were seen in a favorable light in Greece. Partly, I think it's because there was a growing perception in Greece that the tough demands for reform were not coming so much from the bankers this time, but from the IMF and from Germany. Partly, I think it's because we had actually, on the banking side, taken the initiative to launch these negotiations over restructuring, fully aware that the banks would end up losing a substantial amount of their claims on Greece. With regard to President Sarkozy and the French banks, I think that part of this was showmanship on his part. Part of it was to threaten us and hopefully, in his mind, probably catalyze us into giving more ground in negotiations.
Did he succeed? I mean, you've been in the U.S. Navy. You have faced the whiff of gun smoke before.
I had. I don't think the outcome eventually was very heavily influenced by President Sarkozy's threats. I do think it also, though, reflects a tendency that politicians have in many countries, which is at a moment of crisis, it's fairly easy to blame the bankers. And I think that's not just a French tendency, but we've seen it at times in the U.S. and Germany and elsewhere.
And you did become a bit of a hero, it seems, at least to some people in Greece who saw you on television and so on. Why was that?
Oh, I'm not sure, David. I think maybe because I have a capacity to listen. And I think that if you associate that with a capacity to empathize with people who are going through an extraordinarily tough time, after all, you could certainly say that the Greek people brought much of this pain down upon them themselves. But the reality is that they paid the brunt of the price for the adjustment of this entire Eurozone crisis. And I think that the reality is that it is important to understand that the Greek population was put through extremely painful and, in my view, extremely excessive adjustment process.
Yeah, no, thank you. That's a really interesting sort of background. In terms of the debt restructuring deal itself, I guess my first question to you, Charles, is when did you first realize a deal could be done? And what was the sort of turning point in those negotiations?
I think it went through two phases, Burhan. We thought we had an initial deal in July of 2011, and we'd only been seriously negotiating then for less than 2 months. But the pressure was on us to cut a deal. And we actually reached an initial agreement in July, I think it was 21 of 2011, over a restructuring that only involved a 21% reduction in the net present value of the claims on Greece. We were surprised that this agreement was reached with the IMF and with the European authorities. And we thought that we could take that to the marketplace. There was, however, a growing sense during the summer that the Greek economy was under much greater downward pressure than had been anticipated by any of us. And that was true. Partly that was simply the lack of confidence in Greece's economic future, but partly that was the results of what I believe were somewhat misdesigned IMF program elements, which were in effect seeking further fiscal adjustment in the context of a serious downdraft and contraction already. At some point in the September of that year, we realized that this initial agreement over a 20% reduction was woefully insufficient. So we agreed to voluntarily go back to the drawing board, go back to the table. And we launched the second round of negotiations in October. It was a few weeks later that we had an important, and I would say pivotal, meeting with Chancellor Merkel and President Sarkozy and other senior European officials, Christine Lagarde as the head of the IMF, President Barroso from Brussels. But I think that at that meeting, we crystallized some key parameters of the restructuring. It took, however, another 5 months to hammer out the details. And there were times when I have to say that I wondered whether we would ever get to the finish line or not.
Yeah, and in terms of the key parameters of the restructuring, the details of that, obviously there's lots of intricate parts to that puzzle of the debt restructuring, which is maybe quite interesting to our listeners. Could you sort of give us some color in terms of the steps and the details of the transaction?
Certainly. Well, we were looking at a total value of privately held claims on the Greek government of over 200 billion euro. And we agreed at the end of the day to completely eliminate, to wipe out 53% of that, over 100 billion euro, 107 to be exact, were eliminated. I think it was on March 9th of 2012. That was a massive and historically unmatched elimination of debt, sovereign or corporate. Never in history has anything been done of this scale. At the same time, we took the remainder of the debt. A portion of that was paid off with the benefit of European support, and the creditors took home 15 cents on the dollar. But the rest of it was restructured over a 30-year period at highly subsidized rates, 10-year grace period or on, and interest rates on the new debt that stepped up from 2% gradually over the next 20 years after the grace period. This, in my view, was necessary in order to give the Greek fiscal balances and the Greek government and the Greek people enough breathing room to reestablish a stable fiscal position. It also led to a catalyzing of subsidies by the public sector creditors, because at that time in 2012, we had made this massive reduction in the private debtors, the private creditors' holdings of Greek debt, but the official sector was continuing to put in additional money and refused, understandably, to write down their own claims on Greece. They hesitated as well at that time to reduce the interest charges. Eventually, however, the combination of our generosity, you might call it, the reduction of debt, which involved net present value reduction of 73%. So every bank or insurance firm or pension fund that was holding Greek claims that was part of this massive restructuring lost 73% of the net present value of its claims. That process, however, contributed significantly to a willingness eventually for the European creditors, the official creditors, to reduce their interest rates. The combined effect of all of this, even though they never wrote off any claims in terms of nominal values of the underlying debt, the ultimate effect of this, though, is now being felt positively in the capital markets, because Greece's debt service profile is so far below what it would have been in the absence of this elimination of debt and in the absence of these subsidized interest rates.
Yeah, I mean, we can go into this shortly in terms of, you know, looking ahead to Greece and its debt profile and what the lessons learned and where Greece is now. But just another question on the transactions. I think that was an important part of the debt restructuring was a cross-currency swap. I think Goldman Sachs might have arranged. Tell us a bit about that transaction, how pivotal that was in the overall process.
Well, it became, toward the end of the restructuring, that became an important part of it as well. You know, you had to hammer out all of these details. And that became an important part of it at the end of the day. You know, I think one of the things that became increasingly obvious to us, that pinning down these final details, you asked earlier, Wuhan, when did I think it was going to come together? I mean, it was in doubt right up until the final morning when we were in a room in Brussels one more time, and we were really struggling to find common ground that day, including on issues like the currency swap. And we found that we needed more firepower on the other side of the table. And so we invited Jean-Claude Juncker up to the room, who was the chairman of the finance ministers group at the time, as well as Lucas Papademos, the prime minister of Greece, and said, please come into the room with us, help us find a solution. And after a long night, we did. And it included the currency swap arrangements, as it did other detailed elements that are necessary. Of course, in a restructuring like this, there was still a lot of legal work to be done to ensure and to market it, because no commitment that we could give, and I think this is an important element of understanding these kind of negotiations, no commitment that we could give would be a substitute for each firm confirming its own willingness to engage in this through its board of directors or its executive management. So even though we have the authority to speak for this group en masse, it still took quite a while to secure all of the commitments. And at the end of the day, of course, I think we ended up with 97% participation in the swap, in the restructuring, which was quite impressive.
And those people who clearly need to know more about the nitty-gritty, they should read the book, the Euro Shock. I want to ask also about the broader issues, about who came out smelling of roses and who came out, as you might say, villains of the piece. You mentioned the IMF was a bit too stentorian in some of its processes. I think that's been well accepted. Could you say a few words about Wolfgang Schäuble, the sadly departed German finance minister who kept up the view and still did think about this right until the very end that I saw him last year, and he still maintained it would have been right for Greece to have taken a, quotes, holiday, end quotes, from the euro area. And could you also tell us a little bit about Sarkozy and Angela Merkel going for their famous walk in Deauville about the so-called private sector involvement? Tell us your view, your historical view about both of those episodes.
Well, maybe it's important to start with the Deauville incident, because I lived through that at a time, and this was prior to the formal launch of the debt negotiations. This was at a time when many of us still hoped or thought that there could be a successful program without a debt restructure. We had questions in our mind, but it had come in the fall of 2010, at the end of a period when Greece had made some progress in rebuilding its credibility in the eyes of the marketplace. They'd been under an IMF program for a number of months. They'd made some progress. They were going around on a roadshow. We at the IIF had sponsored some roadshow presentations by the Greek finance minister and his team, supported by the IMF. But then, somewhat out of coordination with what their finance ministries were doing, Chancellor Merkel and President Sarkozy went for a walk in Deauville and decided that they would issue a statement that would indicate that basically banks which were exposed and holding claims on countries which needed additional funding from Europe in a moment of stress, that those banks would have to participate in a haircut. And this sent a shiver down the spines of most banks and insurance firms and pension funds, which were holding
and made them pull out their existing claims from Greece and other countries and made them very loath to put any more money in.
It did. I think it was an unfortunate mistake, in my view, because at that point, it seemed to me the die was cast that there would absolutely have to be a restructuring for Greece. And I know that the statement caught the finance ministers of most Eurozone countries off guard. Be that as it may, Greece soldiered on for a while, but it was increasingly clear to me and others at the Institute, and we had been fairly embedded in this process by that time, because we'd been engaged in working with Greece and working with our market participant for the better part of 2010. It was fairly clear to me at that point that Greece would need a restructuring, and it was clear to many who spoke unofficially about this, but neither the IMF nor Greece could officially say we need a restructuring, because the European Central Bank was firmly and adamantly opposed to it, David. And I think that was unfortunate, although understandable. I have huge respect for Jean-Claude Trichet and for his view that the integrity of the Eurozone itself.
Well, he was partly a creature, I think, of the shareholders who were, after all, in the lead, the German Central Bank and the French Central Bank, who didn't want it. Tell us a bit about Wolfgang Schäuble and his view that he had that Greece should have taken a walk away, at least for a few years. That was his line, and then rejoin later. Was that a credible
argument?
I never considered it credible. I never considered it practical. With all respect to Minister Sharpe, and sadly we lost him just a few months ago, I never considered this a practical alternative because of my concern. And this was a concern. It was widely shared among the leaders in our banking community, the chairman, the CEOs of banks everywhere, as it was shared by many other economists and many other officials, the concern that if Greece were forced out, that Italy could well follow. Once you fractured the integrity of the structure of the Eurozone, not through a debt restructuring, but through a forced exit, not only would it have created a period of chaos in Greece, which could have extended for quite some time, but it would have created a huge hole in the balance sheet of the ECB. It would have created the need for much greater financing for Portugal, for Spain, and ostensibly for Italy. But more importantly, it could well have catalyzed unmanageable market pressures on Italy. And at the time, it's important to recognize that for much of this period, the Italian economy was also under a tremendous amount of pressure. President Berlusconi and his economic team were not always on the same page. Doubts about the sustainability of Italian debt were growing. And so the fact that some officials, even as knowledgeable as experienced as Sharpe, thought that Greece could be isolated was not something that I could ever agree with.
Well, I'm sure we'll be doing another podcast on Italy before too long. We're going to round this up in a moment, and Borjan will end up by asking you some questions about the debt situation for Greece now. But just before we do that, you're chairman of the Partners Group. You've already had quite a large investment in the pharmaceutical field in Greece some years ago. I think you're considering a new investment. Could you tell us about how does Greece look these days under Prime Minister Mitsotakis for private investors in the industrial sphere?
Well, just to one small point of correction, I'm chairman of Partners Group USA, but I am involved in our activities in Europe, including in Greece, and we're very pleased that we made a major investment 2 years ago in a pharmaceutical firm in Greece called Pharmathen, which is a leading generic pharmaceutical firm, which has special long-lasting injectable drugs, where you can inject drugs into the system and they can last for as long as a month. This is a highly advanced scientific company, which is done exceptionally well under the leadership of some very distinguished and capable Greek scientists. We are looking to expand our investment there and perhaps expand investing outside Greece as well. But we have also come to the view that under the leadership of Prime Minister Mitsotakis, a huge amount of reforms have already taken place. And there has been a reestablishment of a credibility of the fiscal position with a primary surplus these days. The effects of that have been to rebuild confidence in the rating agencies, rebuild confidence in the broader investor community, and in firms like ours at Partners Group. Now, we look at every investment on its merits, but we're exploring different sectors in the economy there, including the possibility of investing in renewable energy space. We think that Greece has a potential important role to play as a regional energy hub for Europe, as Europe goes through this somewhat painful but critical adaptation, not only to the loss of Russian energy, but to the sharp move toward renewable energy. And we're excited to be a part of that. We'll just add finally to that, though, that notwithstanding all the progress that has been made under the what I consider to be a strong set of economic and financial reforms under Prime Minister Mitsotakis, that there's still a lot of work to be done. There still remain inefficiencies in the Greek economy and the distribution system and the trucking system. There remains work to be done on the legal system. A lot of administrative and bureaucratic apparatus needs to be disassembled if you're to create a truly more welcoming investment environment, not just for foreign investors, but for Greek citizens as well. And the Greek citizens need to fully embrace their responsibilities, as they know, on tax compliance. So there's a lot of work to be done. These kind of structural and cultural changes don't happen overnight, but we're quite encouraged at Partners Group by what we see.
Yeah, no, that's a nice segue in terms of, you know, where do you see Greece now, some sort of 10 years after the so-called debt crisis from a debt capital markets perspective, obviously Greece now has full access to the capital markets. It's recently back to investment grade status. It's trading through Italy. Where do you see Greece now?
I think Borhan, Greece has even more potential to strengthen its credibility in the debt markets and the capital markets. I think it is remarkable when you think about it, how far Greece has advanced. When I woke up sometime in mid-December and looked at my digital version of The Economist, and I saw that The Economist had selected Greece as country of the year, I wasn't shocked, but I was pleasantly surprised because I think Greece had earned it. It is a turnaround that wasn't fully expected. And I think it's important to recognize that it's a turnaround that has been in the works now for a number of years. The digitalization of government services there, the increased transparency, the insistence on accountability in the government. This has never been much of a hallmark of Greek governments. And as we know, unfortunately, many of the governments that have led Greece through difficult and some easy times since the end of their civil war in 1949, had been fed by clientelism, by populism, and at times by socialist economic policies. Today, I think Greece has reestablished a very solid position in capital markets. I think it can build on that further. Key is consistency and sustainability, in my view. They have to demonstrate that they can stay with a very solid and credible fiscal policy for a number of years, while at the same time making sure that the infrastructure and other investments in the Greek economy that are needed are actually followed through. And I think they've done a very good job with utilizing European funds. Ultimately, though, it will not just be about European funds. It'll be about attracting home Greek capital from abroad, because during the years of crisis, much Greek capital left Greece and much human capital left Greece. And one of the encouraging signs to me is that you're seeing, and it's still gradual at this time, but you're seeing a repatriation of Greek human capital. And I think this is exciting because this will be important. Greece lost a substantial amount of its population during the crisis. And, there's still some ways to go. If you look at the macro economy, Greece unemployment is still over 10%.
Yeah,
it'll
GDP.
Take a while. GDP is, I think the latest numbers are annual growth 2%. Now, they had a very strong year in 2022. Less robust year in 2023. The important thing, though, is that they have renewed as a priority some of their structural investments, and they have demonstrated a real capacity to download the European investment funds in a way which is making a real difference in the future of the Greek economy. But, when I looked at the severity of the problems of the Greek economy when I was first pulled into this in 2011, I knew it would take quite a while to rebuild the credibility of the economy. Many of the structural elements there, like reforming the legal system, cleaning up, as we were talking about earlier with David, cleaning up some of the unnecessary administrative requirements, downsizing the bureaucracy in the public sector, making sure that you can provide competitive wages to the private sector, ensuring that the educational system there is geared to help meet the needs of a competitive Greek economy. These are the things that still need to be addressed going forward. And I'm encouraged that they will be under the Prime Minister's.
Well, there's enough material there, I think, to keep us going for the future, Charles. We all know that the proof of the pudding will be in the eating here. ONFIF intends to do a lot of work on Greece as we go forward, because we have been very much encouraged, I think, by this restructuring of the economy that you've been talking about. You played a big role in all this. Those people who want to know more about it, go out and buy this book, Euroshock, by Charles Delora. We look forward to keeping up the contact with you as we go forward into this. It'd be very interested to see how the Partners Group carries on its development in Greece. Looking forward to reading about new investments. Looking forward to seeing what Borhan Kadbai, who's been my partner on this podcast, writes about the Greek debt market as well. So I'd like to say thank you very much indeed, Charles, for talking to us about your book. You've been at the IIF. You've now been with the Partners Group in different fields for about 13 years. Look forward to many more years when you're treading those particular boards, and we look forward to continuing the journey with you. Thank you for being with us today.
It's a pleasure to have been with you, David and Borhan, and glad to stay in touch with ONFIF going forward.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of the ONFIF podcast. If you found today's conversation engaging, make sure to stay tuned for additional thought-provoking discussions on emerging markets and European government bond markets by subscribing to our channel. Stay connected of the latest developments by following us on our LinkedIn page, OMFIF Sovereign Debt Institute.